Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with the Tim May Podcast. It may look like I'm flying solo today because I gave my trusty co-pilot, Spencer Holbrook, the day off. But in fact, I've got two other co-pilots coming in to kind of spell me as this flight continues, as Ohio State continues its season, as the college football world keeps spinning. And boy, some guys are flying out of it as we speak. As you well know by now, for example, 2 weeks after Ohio State devastated Wisconsin, and then a day after former Wisconsin coach Brett Bielema took Illinois in and devastated Wisconsin, Paul Chryst is out as the Wisconsin head football coach. Things move rapidly in this high-paying, high-paced world that is major college sports now, especially major college football. And I'm going to get into that with one of my fill-in co-pilots, Jack Ebling, in a little while. He's been around Michigan State and the Big Ten for 50 years now, has a great radio show up in the East Lansing area, services all of Central Michigan, and has written books, was a former newspaper writer. So I hold him in even higher esteem in that regard of keeping his ear to the ground and knowing what's going on and telling he's going to tell us about, you know, what's going on with the great turn sour start by Michigan State this year. Really a team that can't seem to get out of its own way anymore. And of course, Ohio State is headed up there this Saturday for a 4 p.m. start to maybe add to more woes for Mel Tucker and this and that Michigan State team. But before that, as you well know, Mayan Williams kind of jumped into the Ohio State record book this past week. He got the start for a banged up or a Trevion Henderson. Seems to be dealing with a problem with one of his feet. And in pregame warmups, Trevion Henderson couldn't answer the bell. So the Buckeyes, as Ohio State offensive coordinator Kevin Wilson refers to him, turned to another of their cowbells, or bell cows, excuse me. You follow that cowbell that when Mayan Williams is wearing it, but Mayan Williams, all he did was deliver 189 yards rushing, a career high, but along the way tied Keith Byers and Pete Johnson with five rushing touchdowns in a single game. Those are the only two Buckeyes who had done it before Mayan Williams. And as you'll hear in a few seconds, Keith Byers is willingly welcoming Mayan Williams into that club. And as I joke with Keith Byers, you know, and have done so with Eddie George, et cetera, man, these new whippersnappers just keep coming along, clawing away at those records these guys set years ago. You know, but without further ado, let's get to my conversation with Keith Byers, the man who probably should have won the 1984 Heisman Trophy and is still one of my favorite Buckeyes. Hey, Keith Byers, welcome back to the Tim May Podcast, my man.
Good to be here with you tonight, Tim.
Yeah, dude, I'm happy for you and I'm feeling for you, man. These young whippersnappers, they keep chiseling away at you and Eddie George's records and Archie's records. And but I guess if you had part of that five touchdown rushing in a game record along with Pete Johnson in 1974, I think, against North Carolina, and of course you with that memorable game, ridiculous game in 1984. And the great comeback win against Illinois, he scored five times. I remember writing that story like it was yesterday, 274 yards rushing, a school record, single game record at that time.
Right.
And five exactly. Touchdowns.
38 years ago.
Yeah. But I remember writing, you know, after the first 271 yards you gained, those last three were easy, you know, for that last touchdown. It puts you guys ahead. But what's it like, number one, you know, seeing a record at least stand that long. And of course that record's not gone. Mayan Williams only tied it the other night. But what did it just mean to you to see something like that kind of just stand the test of time, so to speak?
You know, it's you know, you sit back and think about it. You know, when Pete, you know, said it first, Pete Johnson, you know, did it in 1974, and so the record, you know, stood for 10 years, and then I came along in 84.
Yeah,
you know, and tied. So that's a lot of football games in that 10-year period between 74 and 84. And, you know, that was like, I didn't even know until after the games, you guys come to me in the locker room. He tied Ohio State record for five touchdowns by a running back. I'm like, I did? I wasn't even aware of it because, you know, winning because we needed all five.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Touchdowns. Yeah. It wasn't in a blowout, you know, such as yesterday or when Pete did it. And so I would, you know, I won't think thinking about records, but then, you know, from 1984 to 2022, you know, 38 years,
Yeah.
a lot of Ohio State football has been played in that time.
Yeah.
And to still think, man, no one has ever scored, caught five touchdown passes or ran five touchdown, you know, that we've thrown for five touchdown passes, you know, a few times, but not actually, you know, scored them by one individual. So that's, you know, very rare feat. So, you know, next time I see Mayan Williams, I'm gonna have to welcome him to the five touchdown club, five rushing touchdown club.
Yeah.
You know, because it is you know, very, you know, rare era. You know, it's only three of us there: Pete Johnson, myself, and now Mayan Williams. And so I'm very, very, you know, excited about Mayan joining the club.
Yeah,
You know,
you you've met Mayan, right? I mean, you know him a little bit, right?
Just a little bit,
yeah.
And just briefly. I unfortunately I couldn't get away Friday night. Go to the captain's dinner with him, and I usually eat dinner, to, you know, because that's a Friday night before homecoming. And unfortunately, I had to miss it this year. But I'll see him over the next coming of weeks and shake his hand and give him a big old hug and, you know, congratulate him, you know, on accomplishing that feat.
Well, I know you probably watched the game and you've seen Mayan Williams play. What stands out to you about this young man? You know, Trevion Henderson is still, I think, even by the coaching staff, considered maybe their, quote, number one back. But, you know, he's having trouble answering the bell on a consistent basis. And, man, I just go back to that Rose Bowl when Mayan Williams got the ball rolling finally for Ohio State in that second quarter. It kind of changed the game. And all this guy does when they put him in the game is gain yards and run through tackles. I mean, just what's your take on him?
Oh, you know, I love it. He runs violently. You know, he says from his childhood upbringing, he – take out that frustration, you know, somewhere, and what better place to do it on the football field? I mean, and, you know, and I love the way he runs. And, you know, two things can be true. You can have two number one running backs.
Yeah.
You know, so with Trevion Winterson, there's a number one guy, and so is Mayan Williams, you know, the number one guy. So every once in a while, you get stockpiled, you know, with talent, whereas they really equally, you know, that way. I think Georgia's had that problem. You know, in the past, Auburn, when they had Cadillac Williams as the running back. So, you know, so they have, you know, North Carolina had, but, you know, dual running backs who just both are starter one, starter two, but they're both just, you know, starting, you know, running backs, you know, in this college football. I mean, Mayan Williams can go to any college in America and be the starter, just like Trevion Henderson can go to any college and start. But that goes, I can always just hear Earl Bruce's head name in the back of my head. You know, football is the greatest team sport there is. No one can have individual success without others. And what better, you know, that you can see Trevion Henderson cheering for Mayan all five of those touchdowns and vice versa, you know, when Trevion is playing. And everyone knows that, you know, not only did Mayan Williams score a touchdown, but so did offensive line. Threw a tremendous effort. And you know, we have to single out a guy to talk about him individually. But they are all, you know, the team, you know, is the most important thing about the success that Mayan Williams, you know, had and with Trevion. And, you know, so our success, you know, in 2022 is going to be coming down to how well the team plays, not just one individual.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, John Wooldridge always said you guys had the two best running backs in the country back when he was your tandem.
I agree. John wouldn't gonna let me stay. I wouldn't let John. I wouldn't stand on the sideline too long. John would. I want to make sure they remember that I'm a starter. John was special. John could run, especially that game. You know, when I did have the five touchdowns, you know, I almost didn't get the fifth because John Woodridge almost scored. We were like almost going back and forth. Who's getting the next carry? I break one for five. John break one for five. I break one for 10. John break one for 15, and on and on and on in that last drive. And so it just as well could have been John Woodward who scored that game winning touchdown other than myself.
Yeah, I just wonder how many touchdowns Pete Johnson took away from Archie Griffin. You know what I mean? Back in
oh
the
my
day
gosh.
With Woody. Because Woody always went to the robust or whatever, and then Champ Henson, Pete Johnson, whatever. I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, if Archie didn't score from the 10 or out, he wasn't getting the ball inside the 10.
Exactly. Exactly. I wanted to ask you this, though, real quick. Like you just touched on it a second ago. You know, in these transfer portal days, you know, where you can, if you're not really getting to be the guy, you can transfer somewhere else like that. You know, you couldn't do that back in your day. This is kind of incredible that Ohio State has two Like you said, because without Trevion not being able to answer the bell, they would have been in a world hurt a little bit. I mean, that young freshman, Dallin Hayden's really coming on fast too, Mayan has been sort of in basically valuable, right? The last couple of weeks.
Well, he is. And that's the thing. It's really a delicate balance that the coaches have to do. Once you recruit a guy to come to your school, it's not over.
Yeah.
You have to recruit him every day to stay at your school. And, you know, and that's what the transfer portal, you know, giving the players the opportunity to transfer. But when you choose a school, choose it to, you know, for more reasons than, I mean, number playing time and how early, you know, playing. That's, of course, that's high on the list, but that can't be the only reason why, you know, you choose to come to Ohio State. It has to be other factors that make you want to come there and be a part of the success at Ohio State. Because I know for me, even if I had never started and been there, I would have still, I loved everything else that Ohio State, you know, had to do and had to, you know, bring forth for me.
Yeah.
So transferring was never an option for me. I never thought about transferring.
Yeah.
Now, earlier season said keep because you was a starter. But even if I hadn't started, you know, I would you just flip flop me and John Ruich. You know, John Ruich could have transferred also.
You know,
he had a lot of college, but it was about the team and the brotherhood and the fellowship and the alumni and so much more than what goes on 60 minutes on a Saturday afternoon in the fall. And so Ohio State has to be bigger than that.
Keith, you're an astute football observer because, you know, obviously in the College Football Hall of Fame, should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you know, in my opinion. We already
maybe
touched on
day.
That. Huh? Yeah.
So maybe one day.
Yeah, I'm just saying. They got to create that, just like Mitch Rossi. You know, they refuse to call him a fullback. They call him a tight end, but he's a fullback on this team. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, you know, you got to figure out a way to have more nomenclature, you know, involved. You and I already talked about that, you know.
Certainly.
I wanted to ask you this, though. What real quickly while I've got you, what do you really like about this offense right now? Obviously, the other night, you know, and it's Rutgers, and Rutgers hadn't played a formidable schedule, although they had played Iowa going into that game, and they threw two pick sixes in that game and ended up getting beat. But their defense seemed to be fairly solid and for real, and Ohio State rushes for more than 250, only throws for like one – whatever it was, 150, 170.
Yeah, I think it was probably a career low for C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
Four quarters, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, it was kind of breezy. He said the breeze didn't have anything to do with it. But what I wanted to ask you is what just stands out to you about this offense at this moment in time, this 2022 offense? Ryan Day was bound to determine they'd be able to line up and knock people off the block and run the ball again because there were times, as you and I talked about last year, when they couldn't do that on a consistent basis. But what just jumps out to you about this offense 5 games into this season?
Well, two things. Number one, the offense isn't even up to full strength yet because you played majority of the first 5 games of the season without Jackson Smith and Jigba and what he can bring, you know, to the offense. So it's not totally up to speed. But what I want to see is for us to win a national championship, one of the things I think we have to do offensively wise is use the same formula that Alabama used when they beat us in the championship game 2 years ago. You know, that's how good we are offensively. You know, so the first 5 games, the game we had last week against Wisconsin, that's the game plan for winning national championships, winning Big Ten championships. You know, they ran the ball effectively. They threw the ball effectively. They ran the ball outside. They ran the ball inside. They threw the ball long. They threw it short. They threw it medium. You know, choose your weapon. No matter, they were saying that Jim Leonard, his defense coordinator for Wisconsin, you know, he's got to come with an answer. He has no answer. Because anything you come up with, there's an answer. You know, Ohio State had an answer for it. And that's what Alabama was like a few years ago when they had the Heisman Trophy winner, Devontae, they had Najee Harris. You know, they could beat you on the power game. They could beat you on the edge. They could beat you at the short pass. Quick, I mean, and Ohio State had that kind of offense. But we didn't, you know, we didn't have the running game to match it.
Yeah, because Trey Sermon got hurt.
Got hurt. Right. But we got the running game now, and we got the passing game. So no one can stop us. And I really mean it. No one can stop us other than Ohio State stopping ourselves. Drop passes, forced passes for interceptions, fumbling the football. That's something that you can handle yourself. But when we play, you know, assignment football, and that offensive line, they're the unsung heroes of the 2022 season.
Yeah.
You know, CJ's getting time to throw. They're opening up holes. And as long as that offensive line have success like that from here on out, we're gonna be tough to beat. I mean, if you can see it in the Notre Dame game, we were doing this, that, and the other. Then offense line, man, we're averaging like 7 yards a crack.
Yeah,
that's just pounding. And it's not sexy, but it's sexy to me because I love the running game.
Yeah.
Winning is sexy, and they was able to take control of that game, and so be it. You don't worry about stats. You know, that's how you also win the Heisman Trophy. CJ doesn't have to go out and throw 3 and 4 touchdowns, you know, a Saturday to win the Heisman Trophy. Winning is the winning the Heisman Trophy. That's how Tim Tebow, you know, won the Heisman Trophy, by winning. That was really Bryce Young's secret success last year, was winning it. You know, distributing the football. You don't worry about what the numbers are, whether he runs for 300 yards or not. That's very important.
Yeah, yeah. I want to ask you, is there somebody on that offensive line who's really caught your eye? Maybe you don't know the name, but you might know the number. I mean, you know, a guy that, boy, just keeps jumping out to me is number 74, that Donovan Jackson, left guard, seems to really, I mean, really gets out on the edge quick. I mean, I think they're all five playing extremely well, but there's a guy, you know, a sophomore starting really for the first time at a full-time basis. And, you know, he was a five-star coming out of Katy, Texas, you know, 2 years ago and stuff. And there's a guy that's really caught my eye. Is there one of those guys that's really – or is there somebody else on that office like Cade?
Really, Stafford? You could just pick one.
Yeah.
Pick one of the five offense. I mean, both tackles are – Paris Johnson. Both tackles are playing at a high level.
Yeah.
I mean, and when you see them line up, you know, five across the board, and you forget about the center, Luke Whipler.
Yeah,
and Lucas, you know, what do you 300 plus, and he looks like a smaller guy.
Yeah,
you know, standing next to those behemoths, and I mean, so really, but the offensive line, I always remember my high school football coach used to always tell us, nobody loves the offensive lineman except their mothers and the head coach.
Yeah,
all that love is conditional.
Yeah,
so
yes,
that is the closest unit on the football team is that offensive line, and they are, you know, proving it themselves, and they're, you know, showing the toughness that we know they're capable of doing. And that's what they, one of their offseason goals was that, you know, to do that. And it's up to Ryan Day and Kevin Wilson to let those guys take over games, you know, especially, you know, we haven't even had no weather games yet. There's going to be some games, knock on wood, that it's going to be wind, like Penn State played yesterday in a driving rain and wind. That's going to happen. And then your running game, you just can't throw the ball 35, 40 times a game in that weather. So you got to rely on those offensive linemen where everybody in the stadium knows we're going to run it, and you run the ball and have great success anyway. That takes the win out of a defense that sells quick, fast, in a hurry.
All right, last thing, last question. What about this new defense, the Jim Knowles defense, 4-2-5, but mainly, you know, there's not a lot of gimmick involved with it. It's really aggressive. Aggression is what it's all about and stuff. But, yeah, what has just stood out to you in the first five games about the defense? Does it look revitalized?
It does. It does. I mean, the last 2 years watching Ohio State defense was not very exciting. It was like watching paint dry. It wasn't exciting at all. And you're kind of like, who else in the country runs what we run? Nobody.
Yeah.
And that's why we're giving up big plays like that. And now it's not a read and react defense. It's a, you know, make that quarterback think defense. Make the, you know, make the receiver. They don't know what coverages we're doing. I think they're doing an excellent job of mixing up the coverages between man and zone. They're more attacking, you know, but we're thin at cornerback also.
Yeah.
A lot of injuries at that. And so one improvement, we got to get better on the 50-50 balls. You know, the 50-50 balls are almost like 75-25. Their offenses are making plays against our corners out there on the island. So they have to be more aware of, you know, letting that alarm clock go off in your head, turn around, look for the ball.
Yeah.
You're doing a good job of coverage. Now finish the playoff.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully that'll come over the next couple of weeks because they're right there. The play can be made, but we're just coming up a little short. But I think Jim Knowles and his defensive staff is, you know, the coordinator, I mean, the linebacker coach, the D-line, of course, Larry Johnson, and the safeties coach, they are doing a really good job. And you can just see in the faces of the players, you know, how they do enjoy playing defense now. We're like, we can get a 3-and-out.
Yeah.
You know, we can get a fumble. And that's starting, you know, you're starting to see, you know, our confidence. I mean, still Chambers played his best game of his Ohio State career, you know, yesterday. We got to see more of that. Tommy Eichenberger, he looks like a different guy from last year. Like, I don't recognize the linebacker award number 35 last year compared to the one that's playing 35 this year.
Yeah.
He's playing at a much better level.
Yeah, Matt Wilhelm wore 35 on that 2002 national championship game, and he's so proud of the fact of seeing that 35 run around and hit people again. You know what I mean?
Make a
It's
play
like,
again, right?
Because yeah, nothing beats that. And your jersey, I mean, they keep using that thing for this, you know, quasi line offensive lineman playing a tight end. You've seen that, right?
I've seen that wide 41. I'm like, that jersey's not supposed to be that wide. But
yeah.
Proctor's making up for it on the other side of the ball.
Yeah,
at least
yeah.
He's hitting some people with it.
Yeah, there you go, man. Keep your eye on that guy because he finally feels good again, and he's one of the yes. greats. Keith Byers, once again, man, thank you for joining the Tim May Podcast, man. It's always a blast.
I'll see you again next time.
I got to keep your legend alive, my friend.
Yes, indeed. I appreciate it, Tim. I really do. All right. Have a good evening.
Thanks, right. Keith. Yeah, I thought Keith Byers hit a lot of nails on the head in that conversation. Not the least of which is, boy, teams these days, when they face Ohio State in this offense, they almost have to pick their poison. What are you going to take away? Because there's no better balanced Power 5 team in the country right now offensively than Ohio State. It can throw the ball over you, through you, around you, and it can, as it proved with Mayan Williams, one of its pair and a spare running backs, it can rip your heart out with a power running game that's been rejuvenated now with Justin Fries, the new offensive line coach. And speaking of ripping people's hearts out, Ohio State plans to do that at Michigan State this week. And boy, does Michigan State look ripe for that picking. That's why I have this little conversation with my good longtime friend, longtime friend, decades. We measure our friendship in decades. Jack Ebling, just to kind of give us a lay of the land of what's going on at Michigan State. And then he and I, we also talked about what's going on in the Big Ten and around the country to a certain extent. But really what's going on in the Big Ten West, et cetera, the firing of Paul Chryst, Wisconsin's head football coach, and a lot of other subjects. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Jack Ebling. Oh, my goodness. It's always a pleasure to welcome back one of my great friends out there in the media world, Jack Ebling. Welcome back to the Tim May Podcast, my man.
Hello, Tim May.
Hey, are you in a bunker? Where are you sitting right now? Because, man, the salvos being thrown at Mel Tucker, there has to be, if it's like Russian missiles, they're probably missing their mark and scattered all over East Lansing. But my goodness, man, what, they're 92nd in the country? And is it total defense or is that total offense? And 100 in either total offense or total defense. Jack, this is a team that, what, won 10 games last year, right?
11.
And,
11 and 2.
Yeah. Well, that means they won
one of
10.
The two teams in the country, Tim.
Yeah, yeah.
That beat two Power 5 conference champions.
Yeah. What's going on up there? And how's my man Mel Tucker handling it?
Your man Mel Tucker right now is taking some slings and arrows. I'll tell you, yeah. 3 weeks ago, everyone was talking about how he was going to be the next great coach and how he'd got everything turned around here. And that contract he signed was the best investment Michigan State ever made. You went around today, you'd find some people who said it's not worth the paper it's written on.
Well, I know one thing. It probably is, because it's probably worth about $90 million. Would that be what would be left of it? And you know,
there's
you
no
see
truth
what's going
to the rumor he's going into business with Paul Chryst.
Yeah, yeah. And Jimbo Fisher will be a consultant eventually. No, Jack, it's kind of odd, but you know, everybody's going, well, he doesn't have Kenneth Walker Jr. anymore. Well, they lost more than Kenneth Walker Jr.
Yeah.
But what really, you know, from your vantage point, I mean, you know, you're on top of it. Matter of fact, give people a little bit of insight. You know, you and I have known each other for 45 years. Yeah. You've been in the business for 50 years, first as a well-known award-winning sports writer, and then as a well-known award-winning radio host there in the I call it Central Michigan area.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about, you know, Mount Pleasant. I'm talking about central part of Michigan.
It means they couldn't get rid of me. They've been trying.
But I mean, you know, you're excellent. You're always excellent at everything you do. You give great insight. I mean, you know, you've run the gamut from Magic Johnson all the way to now Mel Tucker, you know, and then even before that. But just, you know, obviously Ohio State's coming there this weekend. It's going to be a prohibitive favorite, it looks like. And, you know, we were all remember, it's almost like the beginning of the end of this Michigan State glistening in the sunset. Kind of started with that Ohio State game a year ago, didn't it? I mean,
well, that was the first time that, you know, things were not all la-la land, because it was 49-0 at the half, if you remember.
Yeah.
And if Ohio State had kept playing, they might have been able to touch six figures that they promised they'd put on Harbaugh. So, it was bad. But then Michigan State came back, and they beat Penn State.
That's right.
And they got the New Year's Six Bowl bid, and they beat the ACC champion Pitt. And, you know, people went in thinking, okay, well, there's life after Kenneth Walker. They got two more transfers. They'll get something else. And the season started off. They had outscored opponents 87-13. They're ranked 11th in the AP poll. They're ranked 9th in the coaches poll. They're ranked 9th in the Football Writers Association Super 16. And then all hell broke loose. And they wound up losing three in a row. And really haven't distinguished themselves in any area in any of those three games. And one of the things that happened, Tim, and you know, this is not an excuse, it's just a little bit of an explanation. The injuries are part of the game. But when you're Michigan State and you lose five defensive starters, that's a little different than being Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, you know, and you lose five defensive starters. You got five guys behind them who are almost as good. Michigan State, you don't have that. So when you lose your best defensive back, your best linebacker, and your best D lineman, you notice it.
Absolutely. But what about offensively? What's happened?
Jaden Reed, who was their best offensive player a year ago, a special team star, probably won three games for him, got pushed out of bounds against Akron. He slid into the bench. And the end of the bench cut his back. I don't know. We've never been able to figure out whether it was just a gaping flesh wound or it got some sort of a nerve there. But he was limping around for a couple of weeks because of that. Just came back, caught six passes Saturday, but not for any significant yardage. Peyton Thorne seems to have regressed a little bit with that. The offensive line, they have four new starters on the offensive line. Again, Kenneth Walker III is with the Seahawks. And so they've struggled. But one of the things is the defense has not been able to get off the field and give them the ball. They might be last in Power 5 schools in time of possession. And Ohio State might have less time of possession this week because their scoring drives are going to be about 45 seconds.
So getting back to, you know, the fans, the media, the critics from all over the country, they don't want to hear about the injury part, right? They just want to know what happened. And then when you explain what happened to them, what's happened to Michigan State in factual terms, that doesn't suffice, right?
Right. They say, well, you ought to have reserves who are capable of going in and playing. You know, it's like everybody who is a sports fan must be perfect in their jobs. I don't know that many people who go into a dentist's office and try to tell the guy how to pull a tooth, but anybody can coach football. So, you know, and the thing is, it's not like they hadn't done it. They just did it. They didn't beat Ohio State, but they did beat Michigan for a second straight year. They've beaten the Wolverines 10 out of 14, including 5 out of 7 in Ann Arbor. So it's not like, you know, that they haven't done it. But right now, you would not recognize this team, how inept it is. They got a great punter, I'll tell you that. And he gets a lot of work. He's got a bruised instep.
Hey, does he run like Jesse Mirko runs for Ohio State? You heard about that, right? He saw green pastures, took off running. Next thing you know, Greg Schiano's over pointing fingers at Ryan Day, and Ryan Day's back pointing back at him, and wow.
Oh, I did see that.
It was crazy. You know, well, basically the Michigan State guy popped Jesse Mirko, the Ohio State punter, popped him well out of bounds right in the Ohio State bench.
The Rutgers guy.
Crookshank. And And next thing you know, everybody's in each other's faces, and Seattle came all the way across the field to kind of help break it up. But next thing you know, he and Ryan Day were going at it. Now they made up, you know.
What kind of relationship did they have when they were at Ohio State?
Well, Ryan Day's always respected him, but if you remember correctly, and I know you don't, you know, keep that close tabs on Ohio State, when Ryan Day took over for Urban Meyer going into 2019, one of the first guys he hired was Jeff Hafley as the defensive coordinator away from the San Francisco 49ers and basically bid adieu to Greg Schiano because things didn't go that well defensively at all in 2018. And then, boom, Ohio State turned it around in 19, just like they've done this year, by bringing in a new defensive coordinator. And, you know, Jim Knowles is doing a hell of a job, man. I mean, anybody tells you that all coaches are created equal, well, no. You know, as you well know, I'm not talking about you, but the you as in the universe. Yeah. No, they're not. You know, schemes are not always created equal. You know,
there's a big difference between this Ohio State defense and the one I saw on the field against Michigan.
They're playing extremely aggressive. They're playing with confidence. Almost everybody who's playing now played last year. And last year, a lot of them were brand new to the job. You know, Jim Knowles is the first to recognize that he was handed a little bit of a pot of gold when it comes to talent and of guys who were hungry because of what happened last year and of guys who played a lot last year. And, you know, you always pay a price with brand new guys. But when you put brand new guys in a crappy scheme, you get what you got from Ohio State last year in several games, the two of which mattered the most, the Oregon game and the Michigan game. But this year they're not, you know. You're going to disagree with me probably, but I think Greg Schiano is trying to build Rutgers in the right way. And one of the things is he has a solid approach to defense.
Yeah.
But Ohio State ran right, you know, tore him up just like they tore up Wisconsin the week before. And
Who haven't they torn up?
Dude, I'm telling everybody, this is going to be, I think, the best offense I have seen at Ohio State, covering them for 40 years, basically.
Should I be ranking them number one in the AP poll?
I think they have as much of an argument for it as Alabama or Georgia. I mean, Georgia, you know, I mean, I can't believe Kirby Smart says that about the SEC. You know, it's a tough – well, the week before he played Kent State, so it's tough in the MAC too, I guess. You know, you saw how Kent State gave him a game. Yeah. I mean, that was a real good game.
And meanwhile – Georgia was lucky to win.
The poll voters can't get off – you know, once they demote Ohio State, it's very hard for Ohio State to then remote. Is that the correct term?
I put Ohio State ahead of Georgia this week.
Yeah, I would too. And Alabama, you know, the big question is Bryce Young got hurt. How hurt is he? How is he going to be affected? It was his shoulder, you know. And hey, let's talk about something more specific though, about the Big Ten.
Yeah,
because I think you've already covered it for Michigan State and what's up. Before we get to that, do you expect a game this week? I mean, they're going to play the game. Can Michigan State muster? You know, can he make it an Alamo situation?
No. No.
You know, tough to take the Alamo, but the Alamo finally got taken. Go ahead.
No. This is as big a spread as Michigan State has ever faced at home.
Wow.
I think it's, what, 25 points? Yeah. 24 and a half points, something like that.
Something like that.
I think they were 25 and a half points one year. But this is going to be very difficult unless Ohio State has to go 200 yards to score.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even then, you know, last year, the only reason that C.J. Stroud didn't have 1,500 yards passing was the end zone got in the way.
Yeah, yeah. That's an excellent point. I don't know if Jackson Smith and Jigba is going to be ready this week. I would think it probably still might be doubtful. But
all right.
I keep telling everybody, if you were to start over ranking players, you know, in the country, having no knowledge of what happened last year, and you looked – who are the elite receivers in the country? Two of the five would be Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Egbuka. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The depth in that room is so real. And then Julian Fleming's coming on. former five-star who's been banged up the first 2 years. So it's amazing what Ohio State has put together in a talent well. Now let's get to it. You're an athletic director. You're a president of a university. Do you fire your football coach in Scott Frost's case in the middle of September or in Paul Chryst's sake at Wisconsin the first week of October? Do you do that? What does it do for you?
It didn't do much for Nebraska in terms of money. Cost them $7.5 million to do it that way. And the last time I looked, that money still spends. So, you know, that's a lot of tractors parked outside Memorial Stadium. I would think that you're not going to get that big a jump on the coaching candidates for next year. If you want to be at the head of the line, that you could wait. You could let Scott Frost do what he's going to do. And it's not changed anything. So I don't think that that was a smart business decision for Trev Alberts. And I don't know what Barry was thinking or what Wisconsin was thinking. You know, people there now who are running the show, maybe they don't remember what Paul Chryst did for Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I think that they got their tit in the ringer, that they got embarrassed by Ohio State. And then when Brett Bielema came to town and laid one on him, and he had that smirk on his face, you know, using, you know, oh, they didn't like that one at all. So, you know, and when he left, he said, hey, you know, you got to treat me like the other coaches, top coaches. You got to pay me. You got to give me this and give me that and give me this. And Alvarez says, that's not what we're doing here. This is the job. Take it or leave it. And he left it.
Yeah.
But he came back and he got some dessert last night.
Yeah, he got some dessert with hot fudge topping. Bottom line is, I had this, not an argument, I discussed this with Urban Meyer. I do this thing with Urban Meyer every week called Urban's Take. We didn't get to do it last week because he was worried about his house getting blown away. And not funny, ha-ha, but Hurricane Ian, it was the real deal, as you well know. But but the bottom line was, I go, I don't understand it for exactly what you just said. You're a coach you're really going to go for, you know, a sitting head coach. If he's the guy you're going for, he's going to be coaching at least into December, right?
Yeah.
Unless you go, you know, and swing for the fences and go for some big time coordinator somewhere. But why would you do that? You know, I mean, with a big time Power Five conference team, you should be trying to get the best guy you can get who's already proven himself as a head coach. I think you agree on that, right?
Yeah. Hey, we see it all over the country now.
Yeah.
Tom Izzo said, be careful what you wish for with these big contracts.
Yeah.
People are going to say, you know what? We'll buy him out and we'll get the next guy in here because this isn't satisfactory. Look at Herm Edwards at Arizona State. The only possible rationale I can see for it, Tim, and you would know this better than I would because you do a podcast with them. Unless someone said, we're going to get at the front of the line for Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
We don't want to wait until somebody else comes in at the end of the year. We want to get this thing nailed down, locked down. But I can't see him going to Lincoln.
Nope. Nope.
Maybe Tempe. I don't know.
What maybe, do you think? But I'm telling you, man, I know Urban pretty well. And I'll tell you that the two things that would make him shy away from trying this again. I mean, you know, we all know what happened in Jacksonville and elsewhere last year. But the two things is, number one, the transfer portal, and number two, the NIL, the name, image, and likeness thing, because, you know, that's just less control in some respects for head coaches now. It's crazy, as you well know. You know, you watched Mel Tucker just rebuild that team last year. Sure. In the transfer portal area. I thought he should have written a book on how you transform a team in 1 year. Because it was, everybody's shooting darts at him right now because he's the $95 million man. But what he did last year was remarkable. I mean,
that
was
remarkable. No question.
And that's what you've got to do now. If you take over a program, you've got to be willing to do that because you're taking over a program for usually a reason. A big reason is they've fallen behind. They've diminished. When I look at Paul Chryst and Wisconsin, I see a diminishing program right there right now from the standpoint of the offensive line is not what you think of when you think of Wisconsin football. Defensively, you know, Jim Leonard's taken over as the interim head coach, I guess. But golly, they had no clue about stopping Ohio State 2 weeks ago. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that's the defensive side. So you do, if you see something really sliding, you do almost are obligated as an AD and administration to step in and make a move. I just don't think middle of the year is the when you make that move.
Right,
You let the guy know what's up. But also the same thing at Nebraska. Dude, the sellout streak there is stupid how cool it is. Yeah. I mean, those people, literally, they deserve better. I mean, those fans
no question
deserve better, right? So
absolutely.
Let me ask you this. Forget about Urban Meyer now. Who should Nebraska – who do you think Nebraska ends up with? The young man from Kansas, the young man from Kansas State? Actually, young man from Kansas isn't that young. The Wisconsin – former Wisconsin Whitewater guy who, mm-hmm. who then went on to Buffalo and then took that job. But
that's Leipold. You
know, yeah.
I think Lance Leipold and Chris Klieman are both tremendous coaches, and they proved it over time. You know, but I think there are coaches out there. I think Kalen DeBoer at Washington has won wherever he's been. He's going to be a very good coach there.
Yeah,
he lost the other night at UCLA, but that's another team that's done some amazing things through the portal.
Yeah,
I would think that if you had the right situation and the right coach now coming in, the immediate transfer rule in the portal would make it easier.
Oh, yeah.
Because if a guy comes in, he doesn't have to wait to recruit high school guys and let them develop. Look what happened with Lincoln Riley.
Yes.
He goes to USC, says, who's the best quarterback out there? Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
Come here. Who's the best receiver? Well, let's get the Biletnikoff Award winner.
Yeah.
Jordan Addison. Come here. You know, that's the only reason they won the other night.
I know. That's exactly it. And that's the point. You're now obligated. I'm stammering here. You're obligated as an athletic director to see who is grasped.
Yeah.
G-R-A-S-P-E-D. It's hard for me to say. You're a broadcaster. Grasped this new
excellent.
This new era of college football, which is transfer portal and name, image, and likeness. Who can rally? Who can not forget about rallying the troops? Who can rally the collectives? You know what I mean? There are all these things that are coming into play now. You've got to get that modern guy. I mean, Ohio State, Ryan Day, man, you know, I wouldn't say he's an advocate for a lot of this stuff, but if that's the new rules of the game, you jump into it with both feet. You know, you harness the strength that is Ohio State, which is in this huge metro area with big companies around, et cetera. And it's unique, really, because it's the only big game in town. You know, I'm talking about from a football standpoint, and you know, they're obviously they have the NHL Blue Jackets, but you rally what's in your ballywick there, and you go for it, and I just think it's really interesting who athletic directors are now going to hire, how much are they going to take that into account? Well, what's this guy done? Obviously, Kansas has gotten after it in that regard.
Yeah.
So is Kansas State, dude. Can you believe this? Adrian Martinez beat Oklahoma 2 weeks ago.
Great.
And then TCU turns around and kills Oklahoma. The Brent Venables, you talking about the I mean, we're seeing a lot of roses just wither on the vine in the last 3 weeks, right?
Yes.
Not just Mel Tucker. Jimbo Fisher is under big trouble. So last thing I wanted to ask you, do colleges, do these major football programs and colleges, do they have too much access to money now, big time money now, to like just go, okay, we're going to give you $7.5 million or whatever. Scott Frost, not the coach anymore. Paul Christ is going to get a buyout, you know, some interesting settlement. Jimbo Fisher, they're stuck with him.
Yeah.
Or else they owe him $95 million or something in that regard. Do colleges have almost too much money?
Absolutely. Too big to fail. It's like what we saw on Wall Street. But when you think about Nick Saban always talking about rat poison, you know, he was talking about the media and publicity and reading your press clippings. But there's also rat poison out there in terms of money, because it doesn't come free. There are always strings attached.
Yes.
And it's kind of unintended consequences. Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
Yeah.
So for some of these schools, look, Ohio State is blessed. And it would succeed whatever the rules were. As long as everybody played by the rules, you can have portal, you can have no portal. You can have NIL, no, whatever it is, Ohio State will be successful, should be successful. It's hard to lose there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I would say the same thing about Alabama. I'd say the same thing about Georgia. I would say the same thing about Texas, but somehow they managed to lose.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would say the same thing about USC. Now, there are some other programs that they're pretty good. I mean, they're have a lots, but they're not have it alls.
Yeah, yeah. But just think about all the coaches who've been through a couple of those you just pointed out in the last decade and a half. It's crazy. I mean, you know, I mean, that's why, you know, Michigan State, I mean, you know, like you said, Mel Tucker did a great job last year, having fallen on hard times here because of injuries, et cetera. But you stick it out. I think this guy, I've been on your show so many times.
Yeah.
Talk about him. I really think he's the real deal. And we'll see from there. Hey, last question before you go, man.
Yeah.
We're taping this late at night. If people knew how late, they'd be going, boy, these guys are troopers. And they look old, but they're troopers, right? Right, Jack?
We look a lot better early in the morning.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. You ought to see me early in the morning. It's pretty scary. My hair. Anyway, this is my last question for you, and I want a one-word answer, okay?
Yeah.
Who wins the Big Ten West? Go.
Purdue. I said in the summer, Tim, that Wisconsin was going to be a big disappointment. Iowa had no offense and a horrendous quarterback. And the winner of the Minnesota-Purdue game would win the West. And I thought that would be Minnesota. But then I look at Muhammad Ibrahim, and you know how he runs. You saw that a year ago.
Yeah.
When he's standing there not playing, I said, whoa, we got a different game now. And Minnesota made every mistake possible. If they played seven times, I still think Minnesota would win four or five. But they didn't win that night. And now Purdue has already played its only tough crossover team.
Yep.
Lost in the last seconds to Penn State.
Yep.
Doesn't have to play Ohio State. Doesn't have to play Michigan. Doesn't even have to play Michigan State.
Yeah.
So they are in great shape. They've already played Minnesota, got a win there. So they would have to lose twice the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And I don't see Illinois, Wisconsin, and Illinois, two of those three beating them.
Yeah. 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 It's pretty cool when you're built in crossover games with one of them is with Indiana, right?
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. Jack Ebling, man, always a pleasure. Appreciate you. You're a wealth of knowledge. And we're going to get together again a couple more times here during this Big Ten season just to see how your prediction is coming along. Give me one quick thing. What you got a score for Saturday yet, or are you still formulating?
I'm still formulating, but I'm somewhere in the range of 59-10.
Dude, I hate to tell you this, but that is a distinct possibility.
Well, last year was 56-7.
Yeah.
And I think
that was a better Michigan State offense team, right? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
What? 59-10.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Jack Ebling. Jack Ebling, thanks for joining the Tim May podcast again, my man.
You got it.
Boy, always appreciate speaking with Jack Ebling. I'm a guest on his radio show from time to time, too. You know, you could put us in a room and put a microphone between us, and we'd probably still be talking 24 hours later. As a matter of fact, we recorded that portion of the podcast around midnight this week, on a day this week. But I digress. Bottom line, I appreciate Keith Byers, as usual, coming on for another guest appearance on my podcast, and Jack Ebling. And, you know, we'll be back about the same time next week, and we'll be looking at the national landscape again. You know, how does Alabama do with Bryce Young on the shelf? Obviously, Alabama rebounded pretty quickly in that game the other day at Arkansas, a team that's supposed to give them a great test and got the job done. We'll see if that can continue with this gauntlet Alabama's running. But then more specifically, what is Ohio State going to do in this last game before a well-deserved off week? Because they've been going at it pretty strong. Of course, been going at it pretty strong with five straight home games, only the third time the team's ever done that. They take this show on the road now. How will Ohio State play on the road? We'll review that and look forward to some other things. But until next week, For all my guests and for myself, we'll see you then.